Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Imposition of Class Arbitration Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 27, 2010, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Stolt-Nielsen S.A. versus Animal Feeds International Corporation. The question in this case was whether imposing class arbitration on parties whose arbitration clauses are silent on that issue is inconsistent with the Federal Arbitration Act. In a 5-3 opinion delivered by Justice Alito, the court held that imposing class arbitration on parties who have not agreed to authorize class arbitration is inconsistent with the Federal Arbitration Act. To discuss the case, we have Timothy Sandifer, who is a National Litigation Center principal attorney at the Pacific Legal Foundation. Mr. Sandifer submitted an amicus brief in support of Stolt-Nielsen. He also submitted an amicus brief in Rent-A-Center versus Jackson, a case that he mentions in this podcast. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Sandifer.
Stolt-Nielsen versus Animal Feeds Corporation is the first of two Federal Arbitration Act cases before the U.S. Supreme Court this year, the other being Rent-A-Center versus Jackson. In both of these cases, as well as the three arbitration cases from last year, the question centers around the relationship between arbitration and the review of disputes by courts. This may seem unexciting to non-specialists, but it's a matter of continual dispute between those who worry that businesses abuse arbitration agreements to deprive customers of the opportunity for judicial review of disputes, and those who view arbitration as a contractual matter that promotes economic efficiency and helps prevent frivolous lawsuits. Stolt-Nielsen is a shipping company that did business with Animal Feeds under a contract that provided for arbitration in the event that a dispute arose between them. Animal Feeds then filed a class action lawsuit in court accusing Stolt-Nielsen of violating certain antitrust laws. The court sent the case to arbitration. Stolt-Nielsen thought this was improper because the arbitration agreement between the two companies said nothing about class action claims, only about disputes between the two companies themselves. Since arbitration exists only as a function of the agreement between the parties, a person or a company should not be forced into arbitration against his or her will. Animal Feeds, however, argued that their claims were appropriate for arbitration because it's up to the arbitrator to decide in the first instance whether the agreement actually allows for arbitration or not, and because the arbitration agreement covered, quote, all disputes, end quote. In a 5-3 decision written by Justice Samuel Alito, the court held that the arbitration could not go forward in the absence of such an agreement. The Federal Arbitration Act was written to foster arbitration only because arbitration is a contractual agreement between the parties, not because arbitration is somehow inherently superior to the judicial process. Thus, the court wrote, quote, "A party may not be compelled under the Act to submit to class arbitration unless there is a contractual basis for concluding that the party agreed to do so," end quote. Since the arbitration agreement was silent, there was no justification for forcing the parties into that process. But shouldn't the arbitrator make that decision? In several recent cases, and in the Jackson case, which was argued on April 26th, courts have wrestled with the question of whether the enforceability of an agreement to arbitrate should be decided by the arbitrator himself or by a court. The Supreme Court has usually required the arbitrator to decide that question. Some attorneys and judges who distrust the arbitration process on the grounds that it's biased toward big business have objected to this rule, and California courts in particular have exploited various tricks to avoid enforcing arbitration agreements. But in Stolt-Nielsen, the court held that it was not proper for an arbitrator to infer an agreement regarding class action arbitrations when the arbitration agreement is silent. This is so, the court wrote, quote, "because class action arbitration changes the nature of arbitration to such a degree that it cannot be presumed the parties consented to it. In bilateral arbitration, parties forego the procedural rigor and appellate review of the courts in order to realize the benefits of lower costs, greater efficiency and speed, and the ability to choose expert adjudicators," end quote. But these benefits are not necessarily present in a class action situation, where the decision will affect many people, possibly thousands, who did not sign that arbitration agreement, and where a decision can be vastly more complicated and expensive. So when an arbitration agreement is silent, an arbitrator has no grounds for inferring that the parties meant to allow for class action arbitrations. But the court did leave open the possibility that arbitrators might infer such intent in cases where an arbitration agreement is not silent, but is ambiguous. Stolt-Nielsen therefore doesn't say much about the limits on an arbitrator's ability to determine whether or not a dispute really is subject to arbitration, since agreements are more likely to be ambiguous than silent. But in cases where the arbitration agreement is silent, and a consumer is injured in some relatively minor way by a big business, say cheated of $5 or $10, the Stolt-Nielsen decision might deprive the consumer of any remedy at all. The consumer can't resort to a class action lawsuit because he agreed to arbitrate all disputes, and most consumers aren't going to pursue arbitration over a matter of a few dollars, but because the agreement is silent about class arbitration, there's no way for an enterprising attorney to sue on behalf of a group of people who have each suffered a relatively minor injury. In a future case, the court will have to address how to protect consumers in such a situation. One way courts might choose to do this would be to hold such arbitration agreements unconscionable and therefore unenforceable. But this is a tricky subject because the Federal Arbitration Act explicitly allows enforcement of arbitration agreements only when there's no contractual rule barring enforcement. Unconscionable arbitration agreements are therefore not enforceable. And yet many courts, particularly California state courts, have exploited this loophole to void perfectly legitimate arbitration agreements. In one 2007 case, for example, called Gentry v. Superior Court, the California Supreme Court held an arbitration agreement unconscionable even though the person signing it was given a package of paperwork explaining the agreement, required to watch a video detailing how the agreement would work, encouraged to consult an attorney about the agreement, and given a month to change his mind about the agreement after signing it. Despite U.S. Supreme Court precedent barring states from concocting special unconscionability theories to void arbitration agreements, California state courts have done precisely that, making it extremely difficult to craft an enforceable arbitration agreement in the state. Whether a person can shrug off the obligation of an arbitration contract that he signed simply by claiming that it's unconscionable is a question the Supreme Court will decide in Rent-A-Center v. Jackson. In the meantime, one thing that the Stolt-Nielsen decision makes clear is that arbitration is a matter of contract, and therefore a freedom of choice, not a matter of efficiency. Although arbitration tends to be faster and cheaper than review by courts, that is not, as some have argued, the reason courts should enforce arbitration agreements. Instead, like all contracts, arbitration agreements represent a meeting of the minds between people and groups who have the right to weigh what they want against what they're willing to pay. They should enjoy the benefits of their wise choices and suffer the consequence of their poor choices. So when parties agree to arbitrate their disputes, they shouldn't be able to back out of those agreements later. And when they haven't agreed to arbitrate, they shouldn't be forced into it. The Federal Arbitration Act protects this element of freedom of contract not out of some abstract preference for arbitration, but because the freedom of economic choice represented by contracts is a vital element of individual liberty. For the Pacific Legal Foundation, I'm Tim Sandifer.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.